317 on this gorgeous Saturday afternoon. We're located right where the river meets the lake. And as I look behind me outside of Studio A here at WGN, just a gorgeous day, blue sky, some light wispy clouds, and the boats are packing the river and the locks heading out to Lake Michigan. I mentioned that simply to just say always thank you to any guests who give us some time on these gorgeous days, especially here on the weekend. And one of those is attorney Jeff Colwin. Jeff, thanks so much for hopping on with us here today.
Well, thanks for having me, John. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, and of course, you're part of Colwin, Mashapinto, and Colwin is your firm. You do a lot of complex employment law. And I wanted to ask you, Jeff, because I feel like all of us, or at least most of us who have worked in a job recently, we all take a class or an online course about sexual harassment. And I feel like a lot of us feel like we're experts at this now, but it is complicated case law. And that applies to whether it's a firm or an office here in Chicago or whether it's the governor of New York, right?
Sure. I think that sexual harassment and the type of conduct that is prohibited at work is something that is important for all employees to understand.
One of the first things I noticed during his resignation speech the other day was talking about how he felt like the line had moved, and that really irked people because there were certain things of his conduct that people have alleged that was probably over the line at any point in time in history, whether it's recent or not. But he often kind of said things along the lines of, well, I didn't interpret it that way, or I didn't mean to do this. I didn't think that this was harassment. But one of the first things we learn, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jeff, is that for a sexual harasser in a workplace environment, it's not about their intent. It's about what the victim feels, right?
That is correct. Sexual harassment is generally measured by what the victim perceives, as well as what a reasonable person in the victim's position would perceive.
Is it likely that the governor's office, like the rest of our offices here in Chicago or wherever, have these sort of courses to talk through this stuff, or does that not happen at big government agencies that you know of?
Well, I don't know what happens in New York because I'm an Illinois attorney.
Right.
But here in Illinois, the law requires employers to provide training and education to employees because everybody has a responsibility to make sure that sexual harassment doesn't permeate a workplace.
When you say everybody, is that also then, and I know we don't necessarily know all the specifics yet, but if there is a boss or a person of power in an office who is sexually harassing one of their employees, is it a matter that people that maybe knew about it and didn't do anything about it are culpable too to face punishment?
It is possible. It depends who the employer is. Typically, sex harassment laws apply to employers only. That would be the company or the organization that employs you. But the interesting thing about what's been happening in New York is that under federal law and the United States Constitution and statutes that enforce it, individual state actors like Governor Cuomo can be held personally responsible if they caused or participated in sex discrimination or retaliation. So actually, under federal law, individuals have more exposure to liability than they otherwise would.
I just want to make sure I understood that correctly. So what you're suggesting is because he was a state employee, he can be federally charged with sexual discrimination as opposed to if it was an employee at a private business?
That's correct. He could be exposed to civil liability for causing or participating in a constitutional violation. In other words, for subjecting the victims to unequal protection under the law, sex discrimination, or for retaliating against the victims for speaking out and exercising their First Amendment rights.
Does the retaliation aspect of this heighten the, I mean, of course, what he did or is alleged to have done is disgusting. A lot of people would characterize it as that. Does the retaliation take it to a different level?
I think the retaliation in many ways is an easier claim to prove because the standard for proving retaliation is different than the standard for proving sex harassment. Sex harassment is measured by what a reasonable person would perceive as being sexually harassing. But retaliation is protection for reporting conduct that violates the law. And any action that would dissuade an employee from reporting is actionable. In this particular case, I believe it was Lindsay Boylan, his former aide, Cuomo's former aide, the first one to publicly accuse him of sexual harassment. She came out publicly and said that she plans on suing for retaliation for what she was subjected to after she made her report.
What other civil consequences or liability could there be for the governor?
Well, interestingly, my reading of New York law is that it is much more broad than Illinois law or federal law. And it's also the case that Governor Cuomo, interestingly, expanded the rights of victims of sexual harassment to increase the time period that is covered under the statute.
Wait, you're saying he signed this legislation?
He signed a piece of legislation in August of 2019,
okay,
which lowered the standard for what is necessary to prove sexual harassment and what increased the time period to bring a sexual harassment claim. So I think it's important for everyone to understand here in Illinois, you have 300 days to file a claim for sexual harassment, or the statute of limitations for filing that claim generally expires. In New York, under the statute that Governor Cuomo signed, the statute of limitations is up to 3 years, which covers a large chunk of the conduct that was at issue in the report that was released by the Attorney General.
I want to make sure I get this right, because, you know, when we watch these videos about sexual harassment, we're taught on what to do within our own companies to report it, to stop that behavior, and it's all done like through HR and that sort of thing. When you're talking about this 300 days of statute of limitations here in Illinois, you're not talking about within a workplace's, you know, legal avenues. You're talking about outside the workplace law, like the civil aspects of it, correct?
That's correct. Generally speaking, an employee in Illinois has 300 days to file a charge of discrimination or harassment. The 300 days is generally measured from the last incident of harassment or a discrete act of discrimination.
Okay. What is the climate like nowadays? I feel like we've gotten, well, I hope, of course, these cases that we see with Governor Cuomo, and there's certainly more out there, that a lot more people know what the line is or should have always been, and you would think that behavior has gotten better. I certainly hope that in workplaces. But are we, and the pandemic meant we weren't all gathered together as we normally were, are sexual harassment claims on the rise? Are they falling? Where are we at here in Illinois, or that you've seen maybe either anecdotally or within your own office, about how we are handling ourselves in workplaces?
I think if you analyze statistics published by the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, you'll see that there's been a fairly standard or fairly steady series of claims that were filed for sexual harassment. There was a spike in 2018, and of course 2018 is the year when the Me Too movement transformed the way that we all think about workplace harassment. But I do think that as these subjects become more commonplace in the news and people are more aware of them, I think victims are incentivized and understand that they have been violated in a way that the law protects.
Right. So what you're suggesting is we don't necessarily, we'll never know the raw number of sexual harassment instances that are happening in workplaces. And a spike may not mean that it's happening more. It just may mean that workers feel more empowered to stand up for themselves.
I think that's right. I think the more that people understand what is and is not acceptable in the workplace, the more people report. And I think that employees who are reporting these types of events is the best way to prevent sexual harassment from happening in the future.
Should we rely on what our businesses train us on to determine what civil rules may have been broken or laws may have been broken? Or do we need to be looking at, you know, okay, here's what our employer says is okay or not okay within our office, but we need to be reading the actual Illinois statutes to know what we may be entitled to in terms of if we've been sexually harassed in the workplace. Does that question make sense?
Of course. An employer's policies prohibiting sexual harassment are very important for an employee to understand, but they do not necessarily dictate what the law is. An employer's policy for reporting instances of sexual harassment is important because under the law, an employee has an obligation to report the matter to an employer if the harassment is being perpetrated by a colleague. And if you do, if an employee does not report the harassment by a colleague, it could be detrimental to their claim. So it's very important for an employee to understand those policies and to understand the reporting procedures. That being said, what determines whether or not conduct is sexual harassment or rises to the level of a claim that's actionable is one that is determined by the courts. And that is what I think is the most important determining factor as to whether or not conduct is actionable.
If someone's listening right now, we got about two more minutes here with Attorney Jeffrey Colwin. If someone out there is listening and they feel like there has been a line crossed in their workplace and, you know, it's gone too far or it's right on that line, what do you recommend someone doing immediately to not only protect themselves, but also just to have documentation of what is going on?
Well, I think you hit on it, John. I think the most important piece of advice I could give employees who think that they are in this particular circumstance is, number one, to document everything. The date when something happened, the specific comment that was made, the specific consequence for refusing sexual advances, because so many times this type of conduct is not written in documents. It's said verbally or non-verbally. So the better record that an employee has of who, what, and when gives them just a much better chance of substantiating and corroborating those claims. I think in the Cuomo investigation, they interviewed over 170 people, and that testimony was very important in reaching those conclusions. The second thing I think is that if the harassment is being perpetrated by a colleague or even by a supervisor, employees have an obligation to report in order to protect their claim. It's hard and difficult to report because complaining could make the conduct better, but sometimes employees fear retaliation.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're being harassed, you need to make that report because, number one, it could help stop the harassment, which is the most important thing. But number two, it protects and preserves a claim in case circumstances are such that the employee believes they need to take the matter further.
Attorney Jeffrey Colwin of Colwin, Meschapinto & Colwin, you can visit their website at kmklawllp.com. Jeff, thanks so much for coming on today. We appreciate it.
John, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, for sure. Plenty more Let's Get Legal powered by the Illinois State Bar Association coming up after the news on WGN.